Blog Talk Radio.
Now, from the world's most famous beach, from where beach racing began, it's the Legends of Racing radio show. Live from Racing's North Turn Beach Bar and Grill in Ponce Inlet, Florida. The Legends of Racing radio show. And your host, Buzz McKim.
Yeah, very good. So y'all are getting pressure from both sides of the room here, aren't you? Okay. Hey, thanks for being with us today. We're here on the shores of Daytona Beach at the North Turn restaurant again, and we just love it here. They make me go home, though, after they close. So I have got a super-duper deal here today. Our special guest, the name Smokey Unick is magic. And Ralph was fortunate enough to be a General Motors engineer, and he got an opportunity to work with Smokey over several decades, not only in NASCAR, but Indianapolis, and he'll tell us the whole fantastic story. So hold on to your seats. This is going to be great. How about a big round of applause for Ralph Johnson here?
Thank you very much. Yeah.
So how did you get involved in this racing thing here, Ralph?
Well, I was working at Chevrolet Engineering. I'd gone through GMI. That's a co-op training program. And this is first to introduce myself to you. And it was approximately November of 1956, the assistant chief engineer, Maurice Rosenberger, came up to me and he said, "Well, Chevy bought a race team. We're going racing, and you're the only son of a bitch here knows anything about this goddamn fuel injection."
Now, we talked about this.
He said, "You want to go racing?" Well, I was 25 years old. I said, "Hell yes, I want to go racing." He said, "Well, you'll go down with Maury Rose. We're going to start in Daytona. And then from there, you'll wind up in Atlanta, Georgia, because we bought an operation called Southern Engineering and Development." Mm-hmm. So Maury Rose and I came down toward the end of 56, flew down at night. Maury got a car, and we came into the Olds Hall, which is on US 1. It's a convalescent place now. But back then in 56, it was a hotel. We stayed there, got up early, and went over to Smokey's. And I met Smokey for the first time then in November of 56. And Paul Goldsmith was there. Mm-hmm. And we went on to start the work and do the work out of there. And it lasted for, well, several years. Southern Engineering and Development, after the beach, we went down there, and you pretty much know it's all a record of what happened. Paul was leading with Smokey's car, and about four laps to go, we hold four pistons going through number four. If Smokey was here, he would tell you that it ran lean. So it ran lean. That's basically how it was.
Uh-huh.
And Paul brought it in the next lap. There was no sense standing out there. We couldn't keep up with all of that. So I went on up, left Daytona, and went to Southern Engineering and Development with Jim Rathman. Jim owned Chevrolet dealership, or he would after 1960. Then he was in charge of the place. And we raced out of there with the Chevys, and also essentially what became ARCA raced out of there.
Oh, really? I didn't know
that.
Yes.
Uh-huh. And to give you a for instance of the fact there was no money involved in this back then, we would go to Hickory, North Carolina, the Chevrolets would take first, second, and third. Total purse for all three, first, second, and third, was $1,200 to $1,400.
Holy cow.
There was no money involved in it.
Jeez.
But we were all young, and it was good. And this went on until the man in charge of General Motors said, not in these words exactly, but thou shalt not race under penalty of death.
He was serious.
Southern Engineering and Development closed overnight. The cars were sold to the drivers for $1 apiece.
Mm. Wow.
The parts department was thrown open to anyone who had a truck and wanted parts and pieces.
Holy cow. Really?
Back then, of course, the Chevrolet fuel injection units, which had sold for $484.96 through the dealer, mm-hmm. extra to the customer, those were in demand, and they were just given away to anyone that wanted them.
Yeah. Amazing.
And gradually, that place was no more, and racing was no more. And I wound up back at General Motors for a short period of time. And then I got an offer to go on, and I went over to Holley Carburetor.
Mm-hmm.
And Holley was very good to me over the years. And I wound up out on the road doing production and experimental work. And I called on most of the companies. And what I like to say is in engineering, I worked, well, I'll bring that up a little bit later.
Mm-hmm. Now, while you're,
excuse me.
Oh, I'm sorry about
Go
that.
Ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, while you were with Holley, didn't you design the double pumper?
Well, yes, I was going to bring that all along because it came in a bunch of stages. The first thing I did when I was out in the race field was try to get the race business. And most everyone at that time used an AFB Carter.
Mm-hmm.
They had a problem in the fact that they wouldn't handle going around the corner.
I understand they made really good door stops.
No, here's the whole thing that was true, absolutely. During the course of being involved in all of the racing, say at General Motors, you could take a Carter, a Holley, or a Rochester,
mm-hmm.
go into the dynamometer, at controlled experience,
mm-hmm.
controlled temperature, controlled fuel, as far as the octane, as far as the ratio between research and development, because mm-hmm. there's 10 numbers in the spread. Anything less than 10 is good race fuel. Like, and it's all mechanical math. 100, 90, would be 95,
mm-hmm.
right in the middle. But as long as you can control the fuel and the temperature, all those carburetors, and you're running right on a dyno, you're not leaving the dyno, they'll all pull approximately the same horsepower. But it's when you get out, when you have to go around the corner and maintain power. Carter won't do it. But they'll go down a drag strip fine. The Rochester had a tendency to vapor lock a lot. But, of course, you could control that with the temperature of everything in the dyno room. So then you get to the track. And by 1960, I had taken all of this to the racetrack. And I did the majority of my work looking for business for Holley at the racetrack with racing. And it was in my head, Holly wanted General Motors business. In 1960, they had that much, which is zero. But I said to myself, it can be done because of two things. Mr. Knutson, who was going to run Chevrolet shortly, and Smokey Unick. And I knew both of them. And through a lot of hard work that paid off, by 1964, Chevrolet had Zora Duntoff's Corvette 365-horse carburetor business.
Mm-hmm.
By 1966, Chevrolet had 100% of Chevrolet's 300-horsepower V8 passenger car, four-barrel carburetor business.
Oh, my gosh.
So we'd come a long way.
Yeah. Now, did you invent the external float adjusters on the Hollies?
No. When I came to Holly, the adjustable floats, they were side-hung, were there. Rightly or wrongly. Because the average person has got no business fooling with a carburetor.
Right.
And that just gave anybody a tool that they didn't really understand. Mm-hmm. But the first thing I did when I was on my own, basically, that is calling on Chevrolet and calling on the race field, I came up with an end-hung float bowl. Mm-hmm. That would turn left and turn right. It still had the capability of adjusting the fuel level, but it would handle fuel and pull horsepower on a racetrack.
Mm-hmm. When we used to run our old dirt tracker, we had a Carter AFB on that small block Chevy, and it was only a quarter mile of dirt. And we had to put a wedge under the carburetor because it would just die in the turns. And boy, when we got a hold of a Holly, holy cow, it was a whole new world for us.
The Holly worked, and it pulled horsepower.
Mm-hmm.
And as we crept on, you can say for myself anyway, I called on Chevrolet for Holly. Did production and experimental work on carburation and or other parts of the engine at the Chevrolet engineer's desire. I worked quite a bit with Zora Duntoff. Mm-hmm. I liked the man a lot.
Mr. Corvette, yep.
Mr. Corvette in truth. And he was a good man to know. He was a good man as a speaker, the main reason being everybody wanted to hear what he had to say, and because of his accent, you had to pay very close attention to what he was saying.
Mm-hmm.
So you got the most out of Zora.
Mm-hmm. So now with your background with carburation, I'm sure Smokey looked to you as kind of an ace in the hole too, didn't he?
Well, I came down every time that I got a chance, or put it this way, every moment that I could beg, borrow, or steal, I was down working with Smokey on a project. Like he'd call and say, I'm going to Indy, I need some help. Mm. Well, I'd check what was going on, everything was under control, I could spare some time. So I'd come down, we might go to Indy, we might go someplace else. But I enjoyed Indy. It was a little spooky then, and it was an awful lot of hard work.
Mm-hmm.
Because with Smokey, we worked night and day. I tell people mainly that when you were with him, you worked his hours. That was 18, 20, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's the way it was. And he said to me once, if we couldn't have put in those hours, we never could have finished all the work that we started.
Mm-hmm. Now, did he maybe sometimes over-engineer some things?
Well, it's like everything else. You've got to do so much in such little time. You run out of time and you get yourself in trouble. And Indy is a very spooky place to work. I'll tell you one story. This happened in 1963. We had 72. It was a Gurney Eagle.
Oh, yeah.
And Smokey had it.
Mm-hmm.
And we were up there. And it was the only year that Andretti won.
Oh, yeah, 69. Yep.
And he shouldn't have because his gearbox was falling apart. We had run the race in 69 with Joe Leonard. He was running second, pushing Andretti. He wanted to pass him, and Smokey said, no, don't do it. Just wait. He'll fall apart. Well, he didn't. We picked up a hose clamp from Arnie Knepper's wreck. It went through the radiator.
Oh, jeez.
We were black flagged in. Well, we got Joe Leonard out of the car. We got the radiator out.
Yep.
We got a new radiator in it. Then we had to hunt and find Joe Leonard because he was talking to the press on why he was out of the race.
Yeah, we're going to have to come right back in just a second after a
break.
Be
with you in a minute.
Yes, yeah, sir. It's time to take a commercial break. Tim Reed is still here. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor.
The caution flag is out. Time for a break. We'll be right back with the Legends of Racing radio show. Welcome to Homewood Suites by Hilton in Daytona Beach. You're right in the middle of all the action. Daytona International Speedway, the airport, One Daytona, Florida's newest entertainment and retail destination, and of course, the world's most famous beach. You'll love our newly remodeled 1 and 2 bedroom suites, along with our popular King Studios. You won't need your full kitchen, as Homewood Suites Daytona serves up complimentary breakfast and evening social. It's like home away from home. Go to homewooddaytona.com for Homewood Suites by Hilton in Daytona Beach. We're back from where it all began. Racing's original North Turn Beach Bar and Grill. The Legends of Racing radio show continues with your host, Buzz McKim.
Thank you, folks. Thank you for that, and thank you for being here. And we're here with Ralph Johnson, who GM, I think you're a GM genius, not just an engineer, but I think you have this incredible, you know, innate mechanical ability that just amazes me when you hear about his story. And also the years that he spent with Smokey Unick. But a couple little things, you were talking about Maury Rose. If any of you don't know, you know, when they had originally gone down to work with Chevrolet, Maury was a 3-time Indianapolis 500 winner. And also, of course, Jim Rathman was an Indy winner, too. In fact, we have our homely little wayward HHR outside. My wife loves it, but it is ugly. But it has a Jim Rathman sticker on the back. We bought that car from Jim Rathman just before he got rid of his dealership. But we're pretty proud of having his name on our car. And then, Sedco, the racing team that they were talking about were those beautiful Black Widows. That was a special edition that you could buy, and it was almost like a race car on the street, I think. Wasn't it, Ralph? Those Black Widows?
I'm not just familiar with everything that happened. I dealt mostly production in the future and the race cars, period. And now, if I might, I would like to take you up to the fall of 68. The board of directors was to elect a new president of General Motors. It was between Ed Cole and Mr. Knutson. In my liking, I would have preferred Mr. Knutson. But the board of directors chose Ed Cole. All he ever said about it was that if Ed Cole was such a good man, why has he cost the corporation hundreds of millions of dollars?
Ooh, that's a telling tale right there.
Well, it went along that way for 2 or 3 weeks. And Henry Ford II, the Deuce, I called him, asked Mr. Knutson if he would come over and run Ford Motor Car. Mr. Knutson said yes. Mr. Knutson then went about hiring 6 people to join Ford but work for Mr. Knutson. You were paid through Ford, of course, but you were employed for and by Mr. Knutson.
Hold on just a second. We have a caller on the line. Hello there. Who do we have on the line today?
Waddell Wilson.
Hey, is that Waddell Wilson?
It is.
All right. Hey, Daytona 500 winning crew chief Waddell Wilson. Holy cow.
Yeah, Waddell, this is Ralph Johnson.
Ralph Johnson's with us today. And I'm sure you guys have crossed paths a few times, haven't you?
We have
at the museum. You and I sit and talk to people one year. Back when Ray Fox was maybe 96 or 7 years old.
So right here we have two of the greatest minds in NASCAR. How you doing these days?
Good. Everything's good.
Good. Are you going to get any of that hurricane today?
The wind's picked up and it's a little bit of rain right now, but hopefully not too much.
Oh. Hey, who would you say, this might be putting you on the spot, I don't know, but who would you say was the best driver that you ever worked with?
Well, that is a tough question. You know, start when I was with Fireball, he was great. Yeah. Fred Lorenzen. And then there was Bobby Allison and David Pearson and Kale Yarborough. So, I mean, out of that group, that's hard to pick a good one. But the one that's probably the easiest to work with and one of the greatest, you know, was Kale probably.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you guys had some incredible success together. And, you know, looking back, the Daytona 500 you've won, the people that you've worked with, and you're a member of the NMPA Hall of Fame, and you're on the list of possible inductees for the NASCAR Hall of Fame, and I think that's only a matter of time before you get that one. And I know you've been a huge friend of the sport and also a huge friend of the NASCAR Hall of Fame, and you've really brought a lot of protégés into the sport too, haven't you?
I'm afraid I did, you know, but, you know, I was fortunate enough to get to work for Holman Moody back in the 60s. I started there in 63 and was learned so much working at Holman Moody, then have the honor of getting to work with the drivers like Lorenzen and Fireball and Pearson. And you know, each one of them has brought something to the table you can learn from if you paid attention. And by building engines, see, I was at the racetrack with them and, you know, you only do so much engine work at the racetrack, so you're working on the race car, so you learn aerodynamics and all the rolling resistance and definitely the handling of the race car, so you get a lot of knowledge that way.
Oh, sure. Now, I got a question, too, from a personal standpoint. Did David Pearson ever get excited about anything? Maybe when he ran out of cigarettes?
He was a rare person. You know, I'm talking about talent. He was unbelievably talented. Now, very rarely did you ever see him get upset about anything, but I've seen him upset. But he would, the thing about him, working with him, as soon as we get the racetrack, unload the race car in practice, he would wear us out trying this, trying that. And he'd run half laps. He would never let you see what he really had. But he was the good thing about it, he was trying to get the best out of that race car he could. And then when he came to qualifying time, he'd pick up a half a second to a second. He was a rare breed, you know. He had such a feel for race car. It's like he knew how to extend it because of what it was able to take and without, you know, blowing up the engine or wrecking it or whatever. You know, and in 68 and 69 out of home, we run 100 races those 2 years. And he won the championship, you know, running against Richard Petty and that group.
I think I can count on one hand the times he ever wrecked a race car. He was so easy on equipment, wasn't he?
That's what I mean. That's what I'm saying. You know, he knew, it's just like he knew how much to turn the engine. Oh, and what funny thing about it, I remember asking him one time, like I did Fred Lorenz, and got the same answer both times. But I said, well, how many RPMs you turn in? Because they'd reset the tack on it so you couldn't tell what it was. He said, I turn it till the hood vibrates. He was a very, very talented driver.
Oh, that's great. Well, you certainly have added so much to the sport and given so much, and we really appreciate what you've done and how you've advanced everything in NASCAR. And we're holding out for that Hall of Fame induction here pretty soon, I hope. And we just can't thank you enough for taking the time to give us a call today.
Well, I was more happy to do it, you know.
Well, hopefully
you've been
great
for the sport, too, with all the things you've done, Buzz.
Oh, I appreciate that. Thank you so much. The check's in the mail. So we can get you down here and give you a whole hour here on stage, if you wouldn't mind.
Oh, okay. We can do that one time.
Yeah, well, thank you, sir. Hey, have a big round of applause for Waddell Wilson, championship engine builder, crew chief, et cetera. Much obliged, sir.
Thank you, Waddell.
All right, thank you. All right, take care.
Well, back to the fall of 1968.
Yes, sir.
With Mr. Knutson running Ford, he hired 6 people to work especially for him through Ford. Mickey Thompson, Dan Gurney, Smokey Unick, Larry Shinoda, Ralph Johnson, and one other.
Holy cow.
My job was to come down here and work with Smokey and get to Indy for the 69 race.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we put together.
Mm.
And from then on, Mr. Knutson actually got booted out of Ford, and that was because of Lee Iacocca.
Oh, is that right?
And Lee Iacocca had notified Mr. Ford, unless he got rid of Knutson, put him in charge, that he would walk with all his lead men.
Mm-hmm.
So I came down here working with Smokey on a GM contract, and Herb Fischel had been put in charge of all GM racing along about that time.
Uh-huh.
So Herb set me up down here working with Smokey. I had my own contract, and Smokey and I worked together for the next 18 to 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
We went to Indy in 73. We went up there in 74, but we never got a chance to qualify. They filled the field the first day, and it started to rain, so they called the rest of qualifying off.
Mm-hmm.
Smokey didn't want to create a scene, so we just packed up and left.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We came back in 65 with the same car that was 7208. Gurney had built the car, but it was long gone out of shape.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But we managed to make the race.
Yes.
We had a problem.
Who was driving it that year?
Jerry Carl.
Mm-hmm.
Jerry Carl came back and drove for us.
Okay, we're going to have to take another quick break. All right, it's time to take a commercial break. I'm getting good at this. We will be right back after a word from our sponsors.
The caution flag is out. Time for a break. We'll be right back with the Legends of Racing Radio Show. Racing's original North Turn is our broadcast headquarters. If you're looking for a good drink, great entertainment, and the best in food, they're right on the beach at Racing's Original North Turn. Rhonda and Walt invite you to come on down to dinner tonight. Here are a couple of testimonials. These are actual testimonials from people who have enjoyed the North Turn. Been there many times, always great food and drinks, great location on the beach. And another, what a great experience. It's my new favorite restaurant in the Daytona Beach area. Racing's Original North Turn on South Atlantic Avenue. That's A1A in Ponce Inlet, about 3.2 miles south of the Dunlawton Bridge and A1A intersection. It's Racing's Original North Turn, a restaurant, museum, bar, gift shop, live music. That's Racing's North Turn. Racing's North Turn has been voted by you top 10 beach bar 7 years in a row. Next year, they're going for top five. We're back from where it all began. Racing's Original North Turn Beach Bar and Grill. The Legends of Racing Radio Show continues with your host, Buzz McKim.
Thank you, everybody. And we're back here at the North Turn with our good friend, racing legend, Ralph Johnson. And we have a question from the audience. Denny? Okay.
Hi, Mr. Johnson. Wondering what the most important innovation that Smokey put in a race car over the years. I know he did a lot of stuff. If it wasn't in a little looky to try it, but what was the most important thing?
Well, being honest about it, he was involved in many things. But the greatest thing was getting away with all the cheating they did.
Wait, that was creative rule interpretation, right?
No, technically it was true. Like the one story they tell about taking the gas tank out and then driving the car home.
Right.
There was no law then against the size of the gas line. So instead of running 5/16 or 3/8, we ran well over an inch. We had plenty of fuel in there.
So what do you think it was, their love-hate relationship, or maybe the hate-hate relationship between Smokey and NASCAR?
Well, he'd been lied to. He'd been promised things that didn't happen. They made it extra tough for him to get by at certain times.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that made him a little bit bitter.
Mm-hmm. You think he ever got a Christmas card from Bill Frantz?
No, I don't think so. I think the thing, if you want to know where you stood with Smokey, he did three books, or his daughter did.
Got them right here. They're awesome. Every race fan needs a set of these. Yep.
Smokey hunted to find someone who would publish and print and take care of the production, so-called, of the books. Well, he couldn't find anybody. They were all a little afraid of it and afraid of the libel.
Uh-huh.
Because he wanted to print it the way that it was back then. It wasn't all this fancy, wonderful stuff you hear about on television.
It's okay.
Are we still live? Yes.
Yes,
I guess
we are. We are.
So what Smokey did, he went out and he put together his own company for printing, and he called it Carbon Press. And he hired the original editor, Wade Caldwell.
Mm-hmm.
He is still the editor. He told Wade, I want you to print it exactly as I write it. Don't rewrite it. Don't throw in extra or com words. If you get all three books and read them, and want to know what Smokey felt about someone truly, the index is in the rear of the magazine, the books. and look up, well, one I can tell you, look up Ralph Johnson.
Well, he's in there.
Yeah, on one page, he's the hardest working son of a bitch I've ever been around. And on the next page, dirty, rotten, no good son of a bitch. That's just exactly how it goes. It was printed what he thought at the moment when he was dictating the book. And that's what you put up with all of the time.
Yeah. He did not want to be edited. And he wanted to, it's the world according to Smokey, though, right?
Well, it was true.
Yeah.
According to Smokey.
Yeah.
You read it back there, and it is. It's exactly the way that Smokey printed it. And it's exactly the way that Wade Caldwell printed it and went to press with all of it.
If anyone would be studying in the monastery or, you know, seminary, you might not want this book. It might corrupt you just a little bit, but it is fun. And you can still get them, too. I believe Trish, his daughter, still has several copies. You can go to carbonpress.com, and it is well worth the money. And
She has told me that she's never been sued over anything that's in there.
That's right. The
truth when you come truth. Down to it, I mean, like it or not, I guess you can say that, well, it's the truth.
Mm-hmm.
It was the truth to Smokey at the time he said it.
Mm-hmm.
So we go along with it.
What do you think his obsession with Indianapolis was? Where did that all come about?
Well, he wanted to win it. In truth, that is, as chief mechanic. As truth, in my opinion, he had won it.
Indeed.
When Jim Rathman went down, or up, to Indianapolis. The car owner was Kenny Rich. That's Simonized Corporation. Kenny Rich bought an IndyCar Watson-type chassis, but it was built by a man named Luigi Lasowski.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That was, the Watson was the best chassis up there. Luigi built a very good copy. Luigi went up there. Kenny Rich went up, got Rathman to drive it, and he brought a chief mechanic named Chicky Hiroshima from California. Well, Chicky was a good man, but he wasn't having any luck getting the car up to speed. So Kenny Rich called Smokey and asked Smokey if he would come up to Indy. Smokey went up, took over the car, rebuilt the engine, did several things to the car. Rathman won the race. Smokey figured he deserved the credit for being the chief mechanic. He never got it. Not from Rathman, not from Kenny Rich, and not from the Speedway. So that made him try even harder and faster. And that can bring up side stories, many of them.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing against the dad, but Jim Rathman went on, got a dealership down in Melbourne. I got a call from Smokey in 62. I was at the Jeep for Holley Carburetor, and things were under control, and Smokey said, we're going to take the 60 winner. We're going back to Indy. I got Rathman, and I've also got a brand new car.
We're going to take a break for just a second. Got to pay the bills. It's time for a commercial break. We'll be right back after the word from our sponsor.
The caution flag is out. Time for a break. We'll be right back with the Legends of Racing Radio Show. At Beach Boys Embroidery and Tees, it's all about making you happy. Beach Boys Embroidery can customize your athletic golf apparel, caps, hats, badges, buttons, magnets, backpacks, bags, totes, clocks, watches, oh, and of course, t-shirts. Sure, they're at 2033 South Ridgewood Avenue in South Daytona, and they're waiting for you to call now. 386-255-5880. Beach Boys Embroidery and Tees. Back from where it all began, racing's original North Turn Beach Bar and Grill, the Legends of Racing radio show continues with your host, Buzz McKim.
Thank you very much, everybody. I certainly do deserve that. Yes, I'm sorry. No, I'm just kidding. We're here with our good friend, Ralph Johnson, and I would say fuel system genius extraordinaire. And kind of a confidant of Smokey Eunuch. But before we get back to Ralph, we have a question from the Peanut Gallery. No, from the audience. What a great surprise. Our old friend Tom Gray is here. And if it wasn't for Tom, I wouldn't have this job. Thank you for moving to North Carolina and allowing me this position. It's so good to see you.
Yeah. And, you know, I've known you for a long time, but I'd really like to hear what your favorite experience has been in racing, any racing, whether it's NASCAR, your time at the Hall of Fame, working in the archives, whatever that might be.
Oh, gosh. I would say probably going to one of the infamous Junior Johnson breakfasts. Junior Johnson would get up every morning at 5:30, he and a neighbor, and they'd cook this humongous breakfast every morning for all his farmhands. And it got almost out of hand. Anybody who knew about it would show up. If you're there by 7, you got to eat. And he cooked eggs and 6 kinds of meat and cakes and, I mean, you name it. I mean, he would put Denny's, you know, menu to shame. And it was all farm-raised and all that stuff. And, you know, it was amazing. And we were fortunate enough to be up there 2 or 3 times for Junior Johnson's breakfast. One time we were there, and this young couple came by. They were just driving by. They heard about it. They were from Pennsylvania. They stopped by to say hi, and Junior had them sit down and have breakfast. And the stories, the food was awesome, but the stories were phenomenal. That's probably the highlight of working there at the Hall of Fame. It actually, in racing, it was tremendous. Yeah, thank you for the question, Tom Gray. Wow, what a guy. Yeah, and we also worked on cartoons together, didn't we? Yes, we did. What a great surprise to have you here. Yeah. Well, you were just getting ready to get back into the...
I was going to tell you about going back to Indy with the 1960 winner in 1962. Smokey had been given for his work on the 60 winner by Kenny Rich. That was Simonize. The car. So we had the 60 winner to work on. He called me and he said he had that car and also a brand new one. What it was an engineering piece from General Motors. It had an old Toronado front drive in the rear end, and it had an off the engine. So we had the first big rear engine car there in 1962. And we worked on finishing that. We got in there to tell you about ours. Wednesday night, he threw a little bit of a drinking party. And when we got to work Thursday morning, we never saw a bed again. So we were up in Indianapolis.
Holy cow.
Again, 18, 20, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Mm. Well, when we got ready to head for Indy, we had 2 new Pontiacs as tow cars. Then we had trailers. And on the trailers, we had the brand new race car, and we had the 60 winner. Mm-hmm. So we started in 2 cars. We left Saturday night. Smokey and Rathman were towing the brand new car. A fella named Don Bailey, Luigi Lisowski, and myself had the 60 winner. We were running everything fine north of Atlanta, Georgia. Luigi Lisowski was driving. He wound up on the inside of the road. The trailer was in the ditch.
Oh.
The race car was on the trailer. The tow car was on top of the race car.
Ooh, that's not a good day.
Well, the highway patrol came. We explained everything to them. They were very understanding. They got two wreckers, pulled the tow car out off of the top of the race car. The whole right side was crushed in. We pulled that out. Then they got the trailer with the race car on it out of the ditch. We hooked everything into shape and we pulled with the race car, the tow car, down the road. We got about a mile away. There was a man with a shop. He got everything in shape for us so that we could go back and use the tow car. The race car was still all crashed. And that set on the car, and we were forced to pull it up to Indianapolis. When we got up there, Smokey was slightly unhappy, to say the least.
You think?
And we got in there Monday about noon. Smokey was fit to be tied, and of course, everybody was at fault. And Luigi said, look, he said, I built the car in the first place. Let me take it over. He knew the owner's son-in-law who had a garage there, a big private one.
Mm-hmm.
He said, I will rebuild the car. Give me Ralph for help. And I'll be back here better than new, ready for you to put it in the racetrack. Into the race Wednesday morning.
Holy cow, is that right?
Luigi and I went over there. We worked on the car. We got it back together. We got it right. We brought it up. And then the next thing was to put it in the race.
Mm-hmm. Did it make it?
So, the object was to get the new one in. So, Smokey split it into two teams. Mm-hmm. Crower was up there. So, we had a big garage that year, one of Foyt's old garages. So, Rathman would not drive the brand new car anymore.
Really?
Because back then, the way things were with the track and the cars, to get through one and two corners, because there was a short chute between one and two, you had to back off, get through one, which allowed you to get through the short chute, which then said you could make two and on the way.
Hold on for just for a second. This is our last time we got to do this here. It's time to take a commercial break. If it wasn't for the sponsors, we wouldn't have a show, right? So we'll be right back afterward from our sponsors. Thank you, Brad. Be right back.
The caution flag is out. Time for a break. We'll be right back with the Legends of Racing Radio Show. Welcome to the Janet Hale Foundation website. With this website, we hope to broaden our reach, to find someone like you to help us on our journey. Janet's journey started 40 years ago to ensure that all children had a toy under the tree at Christmas. Today, thousands of toys and clothing are donated for underprivileged kids. We need your help to continue our journey. Tour this website and find the Donate Now button. A small gesture can make a big difference in a young life. We need your help. Visit us on Facebook, Janet Hale Foundation, or call 386-256-0752. We're back from where it all began. Racing's original North Turn Beach Bar and Grill, the Legends of Racing Radio Show continues with your host, Buzz McKim.
Thank you, folks. Ralph Johnson, ex-Smoky Unit compatriot, and all other kinds of racing. And I mean, there's stories about Pike's Peak. There's stories about inventions and just incredible. I mean, definitely enough for at least one more show, maybe a few. And Ralph has agreed to come back and do this again with us and get into the minutia of things. Before we go a little further, we got another picture in the back here. You see this 69 Camaro. If you remember the picture we had up there last week, this is the mate to that one. Good friend of mine that I went to school with, went to college with. He had a 69 Camaro, so I was experimenting with a new type of art. This is just black watercolor paper with white pencil, and I did these for him back in 1972. He moved back to his home country of Germany. And later on, a good friend of ours ended up meeting him and falling in love, and they got married in Victory Lane at Daytona. Then they went back. Yeah, there you are right there, Danny Joe. How about that? And they went back to Germany and were living the life of luxury in the fatherland, right? And but then Pete passed away, unfortunately, and very suddenly a couple of years ago. So when his wife, Danny Joe, moved back to Florida, she so graciously gave me those pictures back, and I love them to death. So we had the one last week and this one this week. And so if you're looking for anything in the art field, we have those prints that I've been showing here every week. It's Buzz McKim Racing Art on Facebook and BuzzMcKimRacingArt.com. And thank you for allowing me to plug that. Yeah, that'd be good. We sell a few more of these. We might be able to eat this week, right? Right, sweetheart? Yes. So you were getting ready to talk about Rathman.
Well, Rathman started out with the new car, trying to, let's say, get used to it and get ready to qualify it. And he'd be coming down the straightaway, and all of a sudden, he'd have to let off for number one corner to get through the short chute. But the car, all on its own, moved over 5 feet.
Ooh.
And I casually said to Smokey, I said, that's rear wheel torque steer.
Did he know what that was?
Well, GM had tried to tell him what it was. But he told me that it couldn't possibly be that the suspension on the new car was triangulated. Mm-hmm. And there was no possible way that the toe-in could change. Well, pretty soon Rathman wouldn't drive the new car anymore. So Smokey split it up into two teams. Crower took Rathman and went with the 60 winner.
Right. The one that was wrecked.
And Smokey and I, with one of the drivers we picked up, I can't recall his name right now, but he was a good old man. We take the brand new car.
Yeah, was that Dwayne Carter?
It was Dwayne Carter.
Okay.
Yes, thank you very much.
No charge.
Well, it didn't take long, and Duane was telling us the same thing, that he'd let off to go into number one, but the car moved over 5 feet all on its own. I said, that's rear wheel torque steer. By now, Smokey's screaming at me. It can't do it. It can't possibly do it. Shut up. Okay. So pretty soon, Duane wouldn't drive it anymore. But Smokey's still trying to figure it out because it can't happen, and I'm insisting it's rear wheel torque steer. Well, I got cussed out. I got thrown something at. And the new car was sitting there, and it had a triangulated A-arm. We had a 6-foot pry bar. I just put the pry bar between the two parts of the A-arm, and the rear tire went like that.
Mm.
And I started to laugh. And he says, what the hell's the matter with you? I says, why don't you take a look at this? And I raise the bar up, and I let it down, and the rear wheel goes like this.
Holy cow.
He looked at that, and he says, oh, my God. I said, well, I'll see you. I went on home. I got a call Tuesday. Could I come back and help? And he said, yeah. And what he'd done by then was taken and made a parallelogram. So theoretically, there was no torque steer.
Mm-hmm.
Only with all the joints that were available, there still was enough to screw you.
Mm-hmm.
Because what we finally wound up with, as far as checking out torque steer, on an Indy car, you put a round plate, and then you run it through bump steer, the full travel and rebound.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got a dial indicator on both edges of that.
Mm-hmm.
And the object is you don't want it to move 1/1000th of an inch. And on a Gurney chassis, with all the shimming he had involved in it, and a couple of what I would call torque rods,
mm-hmm.
you could get it so that it was that way.
Yeah.
Well, we finally gave up on that car and went back to work on the 60-type winner.
Mm-hmm. You get them both in the race?
No, we did not get the new car in the race.
Really? But the old one you wrecked on the road, you got to qualify. How about that?
The old car got in the race with Rathman in it, and he was running good till he had a problem.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, we got it back out.
Oh, man. Well, we're going to do this again because we haven't even scratched the surface on stuff that Ralph has been involved in and the things that he's done with Smokey. And as you can see, there's three volumes of Smokey here.
Is there anybody with any other questions? Just out of curiosity about anything. Plus or minus.
What's the capital of Montana?
Jesus Christ. No, wait a minute.
I'll let you work on that, okay?
No.
Okay. All right. Well, we want to thank our team, the Volts, the Ops Man, the Scribe, the Grand Poobah and Spiritual Advisor, the Flash, Pillsbury, Pillsbury, the baking lady. She's not baking cake anymore. She's Pillsbury. The roadie, the assistant field director, I'm So Worthy, Buzz Boss, and the intern. And next week, we'll reveal these people to you. So what a wonderful time. Ralph Johnson, have a big
thank
round
you,
of applause,
everyone.
And
thank
we'll
you
have them
very
back.
Much.
We'll
thank
do this
you.
Again. Thank you so much. From the
the Legends of Racing radio show originates live from the very spot where beach racing began, Racing's North Turn Beach Bar and Grill. Join us next time for the Legends of Racing radio show with Buzz McKim.